going to be completely white and who knows, you know, right. Probably the bald too or something by the time all this is over with. I'll be looking like Al.
Lucky you.
You're right. I know. Imagine if I had a third kid, that would make it even whiter, faster.
So. Yeah, right. How many have you got, Al?
You're good to go.
Just two daughters.
Two daughters.
All right, guys. We are.
All right. Hey, we are good to go.
Richard, you started Granicus, right?
Out of
Richard, you started Granicus? Okay, perfect. All right.
All right. Great. Well, and then I'm going to go ahead and call us to order the October 2021 meeting of the Parks and Recreation Advisory Committee for the City of Newport. Called to order at 9:04 a.m. Could we have a roll call, please?
Sure. Good morning, everyone. So, roll call, Steinberg.
Here.
Smith. Brown.
Here.
Scarborough. Absent. Trance.
Here.
Muniz. Ava.
Here.
All right. Gahilly.
Yeah, good try.
Yeah, I know. I always butcher it. Sorry, Al. How do you say it for me one more time?
Gahilly.
Gahilly. All right. Sorry
like
about that,
Al.
Rhymes with unruly.
Right? Yeah. Huh. That goes well together right there. Norris.
Nope.
Baker.
Yes.
Salins. And Chandler. And then is Hall. I don't see her.
She's going to be popping on a little bit late, I think.
Is it? Okay. Orbitello. Okay. We are good.
Is that it?
Yep.
All right. Great. We just barely have a quorum, and I know Cheryl has to pop off around 10, so we're going to try to get as much done before then. While we're still all here, thank you all for being here. I do want to mention right off the bat that Mark is not here because he tendered his resignation. So we are going to have an opening on the committee, and we can talk about that a little bit later in the agenda if we have time. But start your wheels turning as to who you might invite or ask to apply.
I'll send you somebody.
Good. Okay, just, so let's look at the minutes.
And just so everyone knows, in regards to Mark, that is a resident seat. So the replacement will have to be a resident.
Good point. Okay, let's look at the minutes, which at this point are from a couple of months ago because we were unable to have our meeting last time, and sorry about that to everybody. That was a last minute cancellation. Both Mike and I had issues, as it turned out. So
real quick, sorry, we had one person come in. Is that who just called in? Is that CM?
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Sorry, Nancy.
Oh, no worries. No worries. Minute.
Hey, this is CM. I don't know if you heard me, so I'm saying hello.
Hello. Welcome. We're looking at minutes. Whenever anyone is ready, I would entertain a motion on the minutes.
I motion to accept the minutes as written. Cheryl.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second, Al.
Second. Any discussion of the minutes? No. All in favor of approving the minutes as written, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions. Great. Thank you for the minutes, Mike. So let's move on. We have a couple of discussion items. These are, we didn't really change the agenda from what we had intended to do last month. I might want to rearrange the order of them a little bit just to make sure we have a quorum for the top most important things. But let's start with 4A, which is the integrated pest management discussion. Mike sent out a proposed plan for integrated pest management for the city, and I'm going to let him lead this discussion. Yeah, Mike, why don't you just jump in? I'll save my comments for after.
Yeah, so to give everybody just the quick history on, pest management in the city as a whole, we really don't have a pest management plan across the city or a policy. We have one for the Parks and Rec Department that was built in, I think, 2011, or maybe it was 2009. But the short story of what that policy is, it's an all or nothing approach. It's, you know, you can use, and it's basically, it's not even a pesticide, it's a herbicide policy. So that is one of the ones that falls under pesticides. Pesticides is a broader term that includes rodents, weeds, mold, stuff like that. So that's all considered pest. Our department policy is just for herbicides only. And the current policy is we pretty much can't use any herbicides at all, no matter what, in almost all areas of our parks, except for some open space areas. So, you know, obviously with good reason, you know, playgrounds, ball fields, stuff like that, highly used locations of the community, particularly children, those areas are off limits, which for good reason, for safety purposes. But we ran in, this got brought to our attention or to my attention, the policy that we have in based around what happened coming out of COVID as we started to reopen things, in particularly Betty Wheeler Park or Betty Wheeler Fields for the youth softball. Those fields, because of the short-staffed situation that we had, turning our attention to other areas for about a year, that ball field, those ball fields were not really touched at all besides mowing of the outfields. And so some of it was upon our own fault from a scheduling standpoint, not managing those, continuing to manage those infields. But we ended up spending, our Parks Department ended up spending roughly, I think about like $12,000. It was like $10,000 to $12,000 just to get those infields back into shape because one, we didn't have the proper equipment and tools. And two, we ended up having to pay the jail crew to come in, and they spent like a week and a half out there just literally hand scraping all the weeds out of the infield. We got our money's worth because it's a lot of people that work on those crews, on the county crews, but still, it's still a lot of money to spend on just two infields when we could have probably had a better approach to it. And a herbicide could have been one of those possible solutions. So this pivots to, this is how the discussion got started with this integrated pest management plan. If you guys read through the long, lengthy packet for integrated pest management, and I'll give you guys a brief summary. It is quite a long document identifying a lot of issues. Obviously, in the beginning part, it identifies what integrated pest management is. It's a whole approach to how do we try to approach, or how do we take on a pest management issue? Whether, again, if it's a weed, a rodent, you know, mold, and what's the process that we should go through? And it outlines, you know, from beginning to end, the different approaches, different steps that we should be taking while keeping in mind community safety, keeping in mind, you know, facility safety, whether that's outside or inside, and keeping those facilities up to date and not giving them to a point where it's compromised, where we actually are doing harm to the facility too. So the number one approach or thing that we should be doing within the IPM is really awareness, reports, inspections. So that way we're staying on we're being proactive with this approach. Because the idea of an IPM plan is to not just start using herbicides or poisons or anything like that. That should be our last approach. That should be our last attempt to stopping or maintaining and managing these pest issues. So that's where, you know, awareness, education, so that would be education of our staff. That's built into this plan, this draft plan. Educating our staff through trainings, annual trainings, certifications, competent person trainings where we have a competent person, our lead person within the city, training our staffs on a regular basis, educating them, keeping them up to date on what their normal certification, the state certifications that they would be required to have. So it's keeping them educated on that, not just within herbicides, but within IPM as a whole, how to identify issues before they become true issues. Incorporating training, not only just for the staff that would be handling any of these type of areas or responsibilities for pests, kind of like what our facility maintenance guys would be and our part maintenance guys would be. It's also educating just staff as a whole within the city as a whole. So that way, they're kind of our frontline people that could see the and understand and the beginning signs of issues. So then they can relay this information to either department heads, relay this information to facility management, or relay this to the part maintenance management. And then that way we can then take on the normal or the right approach to solving the problem. So once that's identified to the proper people, whether it's facility maintenance or our part maintenance staff, we then will work together with the IPM coordinator, and we are still working through who's going to be IPM coordinators. We're still working through which departments are going to be doing what. Initially, we thought, okay, park maintenance or parks and rec would be the bigger umbrella of all of this. But as we've kind of started diving into it and we're starting to peel back the different layers and how this will affect the city as a whole, there's potential that we might actually loop in public works to be maybe splitting this plan in two, where you have facilities and then parks, or facilities and landscapes. And landscaping would be under parks, while facilities obviously is under public works. So there's that idea or that potential that we're gonna, direction that we're gonna head in. And then once we identify what the issue is, then the approach that we take into it would be, you know, can we solve this just through cleaning areas or sanitation? You know, like we have rodents in an office. Well, let's go look at this office. Well, they have trash that's built up for the last month and a half. They have piles of paper that aren't been there, that are just stacked everywhere and they're not getting filed. Well, those are the approaches that we should be incorporating, you know, to say that's the sanitation piece. We need to clean this mess up first and see if the problem will go away. So that's one approach. Then if we, as we move along, those approaches aren't fixing things, then we need to go, you know, also the sanitation piece from a landscape standpoint. Say we have rodents attacking a facility. Well, we've walked around the outside of the facility. We notice vegetation is not peeled away from the building. We have vegetation touching the building. That's where rot's happening. That's where insects are entering into the facility. Well, now we, from a landscape side, we want to peel back all the shrubs, the debris, anything that's cluttering and building up along the facility. So that would be the one approach from like a sanitation practice, you know. So we're just being proactive, things that we should normally do for our facilities. We make sure that those steps are being followed. And as long as we're doing these approaches or doing these steps the correct way, in theory, most of the time, things will be okay. And therefore, we've eliminated the need for the worst case scenario. If that doesn't work, then there's mechanical approaches. There's physical approaches for eliminating it, you know, from a landscape side, you know, assessing what is within the area that's the issue. And you build thresholds to say, you know, this open field, we don't want weeds to be in this open field, you know, and the threshold is if it reaches past 60% of the open space of being weeds, then we need to move to a further approach. And so, you know, mechanical approaches, just using tools like the county work crew on the infield, they used hand tools and they were scraping things out. You know, there's flames that we can use, burning out processes for weeded areas. Trying to think of other examples, but those are the examples of using a mechanical or physical approach, using your hands, you know, getting down and just weeding a landscape bed with your hands, you know, doing the work that we did at the volunteer work day. You know, those are all mechanical, physical approaches to eliminating the issue. And then our worst case or the last resort, I wouldn't even say worst case, our last resort would be using a herbicide, an insecticide, any of those type of pesticides to eliminate, you know, the worst case scenario. You know, I went to a bee city training recently, and one of the speakers had a perfect example of, and it was, the question was brought up by somebody, is how do they feel, this expert feels about using pesticides? And he said, you know, they are very beneficial when they're handled the right way and done correctly. And he said a perfect example, he works with farmers to create pollinator gardens around these farm fields. And he said, usually when a farmer invites them in and they have an issue, usually 9 times out of 10, he said, the approach that they do is they actually clear out all of the weeds that are in the problem area. 9 times out of 10, they have to use a herbicide to eliminate all that, because it's basically, it's gotten to the point where it's over, it's just so overgrown, it's so infested to the point where there's no, you're going to spend days and months and years just trying to eliminate it naturally with hands and mechanical tools. And so they would come in and they would just use a herbicide across everything and kill off everything, weeds, grass, everything. And then they had this new landscape to build off of, you know, a new canvas to create something. And that's where that's how they kind of approach it. You know, for us, from a pesticide or a herbicide standpoint, you know, we wouldn't be just out there with a sprayer hooked up to a truck just going to town on any and all spots. More than likely what we would do, be a proactive approach, you know, as long as we're fertilizing at the right times. We have, if there's weeds, more than likely it would be kind of a spot treatment approach. If we used large quantities of herbicides, we would do it on a granule approach, you know, on a biannual basis, as long as once we're able to develop and clean their slate, then as long as we're doing proactive approaches like fertilizing, we're doing aerating, you know, we're doing the proper things we should be doing to a lawn or to a landscape, you know, weeding our beds, we shouldn't have that need for the use of a pesticide or a herbicide. And that same approach would be what you would go for, you know, from a facility standpoint too. As long as we're sealing our cracks, we're eliminating entries into the building, we're eliminating clutter, we're eliminating food particles from being around, we're cleaning our areas properly, that will be the proactive approach to eliminate anybody or any rodents from inviting themselves in. Same for moisture, same setup on that. So that's kind of the long story short. I'm going to stop rambling. I've just rambled for, I feel like, 15, 20 minutes. I feel like I tried to give a good summary of it. It is a long plan. It is a plan still in the works. The plan itself, I worked with OSU Extension Office in Corvallis. They are the leader for the state in regards to school facilities and their IPM approach. I actually worked with them. They shared a template with me. I kind of built off that template, robbed some stuff from other policies that are out there. And then kind of created this plan. Again, this is a draft plan. And the idea is this approach for the entire city, for all facilities, all departments, and on a regular basis built into this plan, we will have regular meetings where we're all coming back together. Our IPM coordinator, our different areas that are heavily involved with this plan, and having annual meetings so we can keep growing and keep making changes and evolving within the plan, because that's how this plan is. The plan's a working plan. It will always be a working plan. It's not a plan that we just put together, throw it up on the shelf, and we just all follow it for the next 5-10 years. It's a plan that has to be evolving every year to fit what our needs are, but also keeping public safety, keeping staff protected, keeping our facilities protected. So it's quite a complex plan to put together. I started it a while ago and slowly just chipping away at it when I can and working with the other departments. Wasn't envisioning this to be a department-wide or a citywide plan, which is really cool to actually build, but it makes sense to make it a citywide plan, not just a department plan. So.
Mike, one comment that I have on the plan is that it really, really emphasizes pests.
I'm on Zoom.
Thanks. It really emphasizes pests, and the word herbicide does not appear in this plan at all. I literally looked, and so my concern is that it's not clear how it will apply. I mean, it's clear in your mind, but I don't think the plan makes tremendously clear how it will apply to parks, ball fields, actually, you know, vegetation and weeds. I understand intellectually that pesticides covers herbicides, but it doesn't mention anything about herbicides at all. So, and a concern that I have is close to the beginning of the plan, well, actually under Roman numeral 3, what is an integrated pest management plan? Letter H says excludes the application of pesticides for purely aesthetic purposes. And I think it might be hard to argue that, you know, some of the things that we want to take out of parks are not purely aesthetic. We would have to make the argument that, you know, this is an invasive species, but, you know, some weeds are native, right? So I think that it's not quite there with respect to vegetation, which is really what, you know, the park side of things is going to deal with. So I see a lot about, like, don't leave food around so you don't get insects, which is absolutely great and wonderful. And I'd prefer to not leave food around than to set poisonous traps. But it doesn't say much. I feel like it doesn't say much about parks. Is there a place that I'm missing, or is there something that could be added easily to address that?
I can go into more detail on that. I can build that in, you know, in regards to, yeah, I mean, you already answered the question. You know, pest itself is a very broad term, and, you know, that's where weeds falls under, just like a rodent falls under pest. And so, you know, because the plan is, the approach is for both sides, a facility side and a landscape side, I can dive into it and see if to add or explain or expand on how that would develop or how that would incorporate into a landscape piece. I know, you know, talking with Anita, I've worked with Anita on this, and for you guys, Anita's the landscape specialist. You know, it's hard to determine a threshold for, say, okay, the threshold for the parks is going to be 60 or 70% has to be inundated with weeds everywhere. You know, well, right. How is that? You know, what's 70% right. for Betty Wheeler compared to, you know, Mumbetsu Park, you know,
right.
You know, invasive species.
And that's my concern, because my understanding is this is going to supersede the herbicide policy that this committee originated a number of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, so that and if the herbicide policy is we don't use them. And that came through this. I mean, maybe it says something about accepting, you know, some kind of extreme circumstances, but that came through this committee. I am perfectly willing to revisit it. And, you know, I think integrated pest management is a good thing. I'm not arguing that point. But my concern is that if we're going to get rid of a policy that says we don't use herbicides in our parks and replace it with this, this doesn't say anything about herbicides specifically at all. So
yeah.
Well,
I mean, it doesn't directly address herbicides, but that's where pesticides fall under, if that makes sense. So it's not the approach of like herbicides.
Oh, yeah.
Here's a threshold for herbicides, but here's a different threshold for insecticide. The threshold is really, that should be our last resort, and that each issue has a different threshold of what determines when we get to that point. Obviously, within the plan, the last resort, and that should be a last resort, and there's a pecking order or it's not like, you know, our facility maintenance crew or our park maintenance crew is just going to load up a bunch of, you know, herbicide or insecticide into their truck and they just go and spray it. They have to go through the pecking order or the management order of getting this approved. And that has to go all the way up to the IPM coordinator. So not only the supervisor, but the IPM coordinator has to be involved with the decision making, evaluating what the issue is, evaluating, you know, in determining what our thresholds are. Yes, this, you know, this ball field has weeds everywhere in it, you know, and right now let's talk ball fields, our sports fields. Our sports fields don't have turf. None of them do.
Right.
None of them do. They're all just weeds. And that's poor management, you know, and to me, I don't want to go in there. And maybe the approach is we haven't looked at it. And, you know, I don't have a park maintenance supervisor here yet. We've got to walk through the entire field and we have to say, how's our turf look? You know, is this salvageable with, you know, w- with doing this mechanically, you know, aerating it, putting down some fertilizer, can we salvage this and slowly choke out the weeds with good grass? Or is it beyond repair? And, you know, take Betty Wheeler, I think it was 5 years ago when we did the redid the infield and tried to remove the lips out there. We couldn't even peel back the lip of the infield where the grass and the infield met. We couldn't even peel it back, scoop the dirt out, and then reapply the sod because there was no sod. The minute we peeled it back, it all just crumbled to pieces because it's weeds. And we had to end up taking 5 feet around the entire infield out because it was all weeds. And that is the perfect example.
Yeah.
And so, again, I can expand on that. I know exactly where you're coming from on that. We need to get a little more detail explaining, you know, herbicides.
I think I'd like to know. Yeah, I think I'd like to know what the process is going to be for making those decisions. And, you know, what I fear is that you are committed, I know, as the integrated pest management coordinator for the city, you are committed to these steps. But if we leave loopholes for the future, then the whole thing could fall apart. And so I would at least like to know for parks and open spaces and ball fields and like park kind of things, what's the process going to be to decide whether we start to use chemicals? Cheryl's got her hand up. I'll let her comment.
Okay.
My comment's about a different concern. I just read it, and there's a lot of information about how the IPM coordinator will be notified and things will be posted. Where I get concerned is when childcare is involved, because I don't feel if you decide to use pesticides in a room where childcare is happening, I don't feel posting it is adequate. Because, you know, it's going to mean nothing to a kid. I feel like there's more notification needed. And I bring this up as an issue because when my daughter went to the childcare, that was, I don't know the name of the building. It's by the tennis courts. There was an issue with mice there. And the kids would see that. It was concerning. Like, not receiving any information of, like, the extent of their exposure to droppings and any chemicals.
So you'd want parents to be notified.
I think so, if it's going to be in a area where kids are.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's one thing, like, on a field posting it, but I kind of feel like an indoor facility where you're caring for children, just putting up a sign, because, you know, sometimes parents don't even, like, go into the facility. You know what I mean? Like, there's buses and stuff like that.
That sounds like something could be easily added to the plan.
Mm-hmm. I'm making notes comments you guys are making.
Thank you, Mike. Al, did you have a comment?
Yeah, I'll make this quick. Over the years in Fairbanks and at our volleyball court in South Beach, OSU would not let us use Roundup to kill these stickers, these weeds in the ground that get into your feet. They're really bad. We ended up, and I've done this for years, almond vinegar and water, 50-50 in dry weather. Apply it a couple, 2-3 times in a week. Your weeds are done.
Mm-hmm.
Really works. Vinegar and water. Just walk out there with a sprayer. So I would think that that's not considered a pesticide.
No, it's not. And that is one of the approaches that we could use, you know, the non-lethal, I guess you could, maybe it's a natural chemical combination. I don't know. I'm not a scientist, but that is one of the approaches prior to getting to the, like I said, the last approach that we should all have would be the use of, you know, a Roundup. And so that would be the other way of doing it. And we have attempted that in the last couple of years using of a more natural side. I think you can add salt, I believe, to the vinegar also, and that creates a compound. We've used a...
Did it work very well?
Yep, it has. We've used a burnout one too. The the span of eliminating growth isn't as long or wide as what you would see from, like, obviously a Roundup, but it does work. It's worked really well. And that would be approach. Unfortunately, costs a little bit more. And that cost, that's an issue also. But, you know, from the burnout one, not the vinegar and stuff you can grab off the grocery store shelves. And Cheryl, to make sure I've got it, I've made a note about childcare use in rooms like that. So
that's good.
Thank you. They're particularly vulnerable.
Right.
Kids.
Both to the droppings of the insects and to the chemicals, right? So it's, you know, either
yes.
situation.
And just it's parents should know, and they can make the choice yeah. whether they feel comfortable or not.
Right. Mike, do you know, does the school district use IPM now, or what's their policy for their facilities?
Yes, they do use, they have an IPM plan. Pretty much their approach, so the people that do have IPM plans locally, obviously Oregon State has one. I don't know particularly how it works down at Hatfield. I know Oregon State in general has one. So I'm assuming it's just a broad umbrella that does cover that campus down there in South Beach. The community college has an IPM plan, very similar. School district has the IPM plan also. When I talked with Tim Kaufman and Rich Baloney regarding the plan, their plan, when in regards to any type of herbicide or pesticide use, they said honestly, maybe once a year is when they use it. It's during the summertime when the campuses are cleared. But in regards to doing anything while campuses being active, or they don't use anything in regards to that. It's more of the proactive approach, mechanical approach, physical approach is how they go about doing it. And that would be the same thing, same approach that we would take, you know, from our park side. Our previous park maintenance supervisor, we talked about it, and we both said, you know, obviously leading into seasons is not when we would want to, if we had to do the worst case scenario, we wouldn't be leading into a season and then throwing a bunch of poison down on the ground.
Right.
You know, the number one approach for this is being, making sure our staff community is 100% protected and safe.
Sure.
And so, that's
on the environment.
Yeah.
Environment.
It's all tied together. And, that's the idea behind this. Again, different areas will be affected differently, based around the plan.
Sure.
I think as we get caught back up with all the areas that we're responsible for, then I can't promise, or I think initially we might be kind of in that worst case scenario. And obviously that's just me speaking very broad, each and every area. There's areas that we won't need it at all, but there's potential initially we will need them. But then as we have a regular maintenance schedule for landscape beds, for athletic fields, for open spaces, and we are developing a true work schedule, our crew schedules are correct, you know, we have roaming teams, we have all this, once we have all the pieces in place, there shouldn't be, unless there's some unforeseen issue or unforeseen thing that created a mess, there should be absolutely no need for a pesticide in any of our areas. It should be actively staying on top of work schedules, actively staying on top of our maintenance schedules, and we're doing fertilizing. We're doing all the right things to have a workable canvas that doesn't need the dire worst case scenarios. It's just a little bit of handpicking here and there, or eliminating with tools, or eliminating with torches and
sure.
natural remedies that we can figure it out. So,
well, the plan already says excludes the application of pesticides on a routine schedule for purely preventative purposes. So mm-hmm. I get. And I would like to be able to sign off on this in a sense, because I would like to give you being the city more broadly, not just parks, more flexibility. And I understand that the herbicide policy we have in place is very restrictive and may not work at a time when we're under severe limitations with respect to budgets and personnel. I totally understand that. I just want to make sure that this in the future isn't taken over by somebody not as sensitive, right?
Yeah, someone that'll take advantage of the policy and right. just try to do right. the easy way out by using.
Do the easy way out.
Yeah.
And so that's my concern. So do you, what do you need from us?
Well, when I get it, I've got to expand. I'm going to put a kind of a narration on the front end of this policy. I've got to sit down with Public Works and hash out a few things in regards to areas of responsibility. City manager is agreed with me in theory, you know, that we should have this kind of split upon two and kind of have two IPM coordinators. And then I'll bring this finalized plan back to you guys. I would love, you know, for you guys to review through it. More comments, more, you know, questions, concerns, bringing that to light to me. We can expand on it. You guys are a vital piece within this plan for reviewing it. You guys are the community representatives for the department. And then having you guys, whether you support or don't support the plan, and then we work through that prior to this going in front of council.
Will there be I guess if it goes in front of council, there'll be a public hearing in the sense that like people can comment on it at council, but there won't be a separate public hearing based to introduce this to the public.
I don't want to say no, and I don't want to say yes. We haven't gotten that far. There might be how sensitive something like this is. I think it might be worthwhile getting public input.
Maybe just a public input process that's written, you know, like just, I don't know, rather than a hearing. I don't know if that's possible. Like TSP didn't have a hearing necessarily, right? There's just like people could submit written comment.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know, maybe I'll talk with the city manager on what approach we should do. If we just leave it up to, you know, if the public comes to our meetings or comes to city council meeting, that would be the public input time, or if he wants to go a little further with this. So I'll have to talk with him.
We could run it if you want.
This is CM. Can you hear me?
Yep. Hey, CM.
Hey, I just am wanting to chime in here because I thought it was a lot of good information, and I have no idea if someone's taking detailed notes. But Councilor Ryan Parker was someone who was asking very specific questions about the IPM. And before rolling it out to council, I would just say, like, ask him for some input and feedback so that it just like doesn't stall the process, you know, like if he asks really pointed questions, you know, just wanted to put that out there.
I think it's an excellent idea.
Yeah. And yeah, Ryan has assisted. I've sent some information to him previously early on in these stages of stuff. And Ryan's been a huge supporter of having something like this because he understands and CM, you've heard it from him, the issues that are happening out at the airport, invasive species out there, and so there's a lot of things, and so Ryan he supports it, but from a practical approach, I guess, but being responsible at the same time. He understands the severity of it, and he, I guess, him from being from the state parks world, they have an IPM plan too, and he understands that. So he's very familiar with this stuff, and I think that's a good call. I'll reach out to him and continue to get feedback from him.
Nice to not have surprises. So. Well, thanks for putting this together, Mike. I think it's a good step.
A big step.
Any other comments? Yeah.
And that's what's taken, that's the other side of it, is I constantly, as I go through this, and every time I sit down with Anita, or if I sit down with the school district, and the more I read through this, every time it's like, oh, we need to change this, we need to change that. Oh, yeah. You know, am I going too far into detail? And that's the approach I wanted, is let's go really detailed on this plan, and then back out, instead of being very broad and vague. And, because I think, obviously, this topic, it's a serious topic, and it needs to be taken, you know, with great care and responsibility with building something like this. So,
I agree. You want to make it solid. Great. Okay, let's move on. There'll be more opportunities, obviously, to comment on the plan as it evolves, and it'll show up again on our agenda. I think what I want to do, since Mike has the floor, is skip over 4B and maybe get back to it if we have time, but go to 4C, which is the recreation business plan update, and have excuse me, Mike, talk a little bit about, we have contracted with a contractor to write a business plan, and maybe Mike is going to share with us what the next steps are going to be on that. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, so with our business plan, we just finalized some dates, our kickoff meeting with them. We have Green Play LLC. They're based out of Colorado, but they have an office in Portland. Very good proposal. As you guys can see, I did attach that to the packet. Feel free to go through there. They've done some really, really good, excellent work. And they have a great staff. So our kickoff meeting, our timeline starting is in November, and we hope to finish by May. Potentially could go a little faster. Our kickoff meeting is on November 10th, is what I can recall. That's just kind of internally with staff within the city to learn, for our consultants to learn the nuts and bolts of kind of how the department works, the rec division works, understanding finances. The plan itself is going to be heavily based around financials, due to the fact that really want to evaluate how we're spending our money, how we're generating revenue, and how that all ties to the general fund. As we all know, there's some taxes that are going to be coming up through in November on the ballot. And one thing that we want to do from the recreation side, and something that's been identified for quite some time, is the amount of money that the recreation side pulls from the general fund. And from a budgetary standpoint, our money that we make, revenue, that is our rec fund. That money cycles back into our next fiscal year budget for expenses, but it doesn't cover everything. And so that's where the other portion comes from, room tax and then the general fund. And so we've been leaning heavily on our general fund for quite some time. Some things are easy to fix, restructuring, eliminating some staff where we've kind of ballooned a little bit in areas. But there's other areas that we need to evaluate in regards to our price structure and how those fees are being charged and what format, what are we doing for our programs. A marketing, it's going to evaluate marketing within the business plan and the approach for that. And then kind of going through our tiered process of how do we determine what program works, what doesn't work, creating those thresholds to say, all right, we're wasting too much money on programs that aren't, really recouping and bringing in revenue. And so it's going to be a full review of everything on the recreation side, mainly financials, but everything is tied into that financial piece, the marketing plan and evaluating of programs. And so we have that kickoff meeting on November 10th. We have finance will be involved, city manager's office will be involved, and then department and the rec division staff. Hope to have some of my managers back. Keely is currently out on maternity leave, but she'll come back in shortly after we have this kickoff meeting. Right now it'll just be Judy and that's it. We don't have our 60 plus center manager or supervisor in yet. Hopefully soon, and and the plan itself will evaluate all three facilities and the business model that's happening within all three of those facilities. And then from there, we will have at one point there'll be some community outreach stakeholder meetings. You guys, as a whole, committee wise, are one of those groups. We hope potentially to incorporate our budget committee and city council also. So at some point, on the front end of doing the plan, there will be a meeting, probably a joint meeting between this committee and city council, and maybe even the budget committee. And then on the back end, once a draft plan is put together, prior to finalizing it, we'll have another joint meeting with you guys, city council, to garner thoughts from the plan itself and the direction and what improvements or changes might need to be made. But the timeline is from November to May of next year, is for going through all this.
Cheryl, you have her hand up.
Will there be a focus on how to generate more income from tourists?
There is. That's going to be evaluated in there within the RFP that was put out. It was evaluating how revenue can be created based from our local community, our non-residents within the county, and our out-of-town visitors. So it's going to be evaluating all three of those.
Other questions? Mike, is it fair to say this is kind of like Parks Master Plan except on the recreation side? Like, is that kind of what this is?
Yeah, pretty much. That's what it is.
Maybe more of a focus on the financials.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The Park Master Plan and the Vision 2040 are going to be used as references for the consultants. They will be weeding through those items to help generate a lead or direction for where they want to go with the business, or where we all want to go with the business plan.
Great. I'm looking forward to this. I think it's going to be a really good thing. A really, really good thing.
I know there's so many things we've identified just working in the last 2 years, myself and staff, and I'm like, why are we doing this? Why are we doing that? We need to change this. And then
right.
It's just like, we need to hold. We're going to wait. Because the business plan will hopefully identify and help us with coming to some solutions on those questions.
Yeah. And Jeanette.
You're muted. Muted.
Can we unmute her? Do we need to unmute her?
Oh, wait. I did it. Okay. I just wanted to say that I read over the business plan. I was very impressed with it. I was impressed with the cost of it. It did not seem for the scope. It seemed very reasonable. And I thought, but you know, they sound like they know what they're doing. And I just wanted to second Cheryl's comment that I remember, I mean, just in your report, Mike, which we haven't talked about yet, but your director's report, you know, the pool was underused at some times, and that just seems crazy to me. And I know that you've said before that the hotels don't like us to advertise that we have a swimming pool. It was the hottest summer, you know, ever, and why weren't, you know, we could have generated a lot of income, it seems.
Anyway. Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe more so in non-COVID summers.
Yeah.
It might be easier.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was shocked with the price tag and what they submitted. I was like, wow, we're gonna get our money's worth with them.
Reasonable.
And I was very actually with the budget that I was able to put together for this plan. I was a little concerned at first with the amount that I had gotten out of for a budget, but when I saw their proposal, we had two very good proposals that were submitted, and it was a hard choice. I'm excited about it. And I am hoping that there will be a good roadmap that's going to be provided for all three facilities to generate more income and generate more participation from the community just in general within our facilities.
Great. Okay. Thank you, Mike. That's a very exciting development. Now I think we'll hop back up to 4B for a few minutes and talk about do a little brainstorming about advocating for a new park facility on the east side of 101 up to in the northern part of the city. So here's the background on this item. This is something that's mentioned in the Parks Master Plan as maybe not a top priority project, but an important project for the city. And one of the reasons that I've been talking about it lately is that one of the things that the Parks Master Plan did is it did a gap analysis of gaps in service. So there's sort of the industry has standards for how far away and how much parks and recreation amenities there needs to be for different areas and based on population. And that sort of northeast area of the city is a place that is underserved according to the gap analysis of the Parks Master Plan with respect to recreation facilities. So of course people can, if they can find their way across 101, they can get to the beach, and then so there's the beach, but there isn't really a playground or a park or a field or, you know, anything like that. And that area is growing. There's been some residential development already there, and there's more planned for that part of the city. So I've kind of felt, and Mike agrees and others on this committee, we've talked about it before, that even though that this project didn't rise to sort of a tier one project in the Parks Master Plan, that I think we need to be pushing it. It's a hard thing to advocate for because there isn't even a piece of property designated for such a, you know, we don't have a parcel, we don't have land to do it on, really. But I think it's important for us to start talking about what should be there and bring those concerns to council. I already have, in one sense, I was going to report on this last time, and I don't have a lot of time to do it today, but I did prepare a memo based on our discussion of sort of the status and routes for advocacy for this year for the Parks Master Plan. I did present that to council. They were very receptive, both to the tracking process that we've been using and to the individual ideas for advocacy that I brought to them. And just with talking to Mike, we thought we might try to move this one forward a little bit, even though it's, you know, it's a bit of pushing a cart up a hill a little bit, but might as well start. So Mike, do you want to add anything to that before we just sort of openly brainstorm?
No, I mean, this is definitely not something that's going to happen, well, obviously, within the next year. Right. This is private property, the area that we're looking at. And there is a trade-off that community planning has been having with the property owner, you know, where the city can help offset some costs with the development if they're willing to set aside some property, which the developer is open to that idea. The need, obviously, we've talked about it previously, Agate Beach Neighborhood Park across the street on the west side of 101 is in need of some improvements over there. There is some improvements coming for the park itself. That is a park that has a concept drawing within the park master plan, pathways, playground upgrades, and some landscape upgrades also, and the dog park. And but there is a huge need on that east side because of the development up there with all those apartments and the additional infrastructure that's going in up there for additional residential living. The current apartments have a maybe 800 square foot, 1,000 square foot park playground area, and the older existing apartments on the other side of the, I think that's 60th Street. They have a small playground also, but nothing to accommodate the large number of kids that are up in that area. And so the idea is to have this playground, or not this playground, this park, and really try to offer something without making people cross 101, pretty much, is what the idea is.
Yeah, I think that would be ideal. Can you be a little more specific about the the location that you're thinking of, like the private property, which development and which property?
Yeah, so I'm going to share screen here.
Great.
So you guys can see this. So I have two documents. This is from the Park Master Plan, which I will dive into that. So here is an overview from our GIS. Let me zoom in. So let's see, this right here, this area is the, used to be, I believe, the mobile home, now is the new apartments, I believe. This isn't an updated satellite imagery. So this is where the new apartments are currently located, I believe. And so the development is on the backside. They actually own a portion of the property in here. Yes, it's right in here. They own all this, and then there's a very, very deep, deep, deep ravine right here, and then they own this portion all right in here. The developer, the idea that the developer has, from what I've been able to gather from community planning, and it's still very broad, the idea is kind of a mixed residential living. So some of it would be, I think originally they wanted to do kind of a senior or older living area, and now they've kind of expanded. It's going to be a multi-use. So there'll be some family living, from what I'm getting, and then just from all ages for residential living. Over here, they're also, from what I've heard, is that the developers are also working with, I believe, the forestry department about relocating their office from Toledo to potentially here. So that's under evaluation also. They have two entries into the property. Off of 101, there is a little gate right in here next to like kind of the old, there's still a little shack that's kind of right there off of 101. And this will be the entryway. We initially looked at potentially a park being here, being close proximity, easy entry from 101. But this is kind of a prime real estate in this area for other development within their plans. Obviously, the Forest Service also. And so we kind of took that off the table because we knew that might be highly coveted development area. Then we have a very deep ravine. The deep ravine really causes access issues through this portion. Just in initial looking at it and walking it, the fire department and planning thought, you know, more than likely there's going to be a need for a bridge. The grade that we walked just going down, down the ravine and then walking back up on this other side was pretty strenuous, and there would be a lot of switchbacks just for any type of heavy traffic use. So the need for a bridge would be pretty substantial here, which then drives up your development costs. So we wanted to just leave this whole area alone. There is another access point on the backside. Again, it's hard to do it without the current apartments in there, but there is a logging road, I believe, right through here, somewhere in this area, which is where we parked and walked in. Fairly easy route in. Once you get in, terrain gets tough. Here is another ravine, which we didn't want to go too far down because there's a crossing and development would be hard. We did walk a little east, and as we start to walk east, you run into issues of called the ocean view. And no developer is probably going to want to let us take a ocean view and build a park on it when they could probably potentially. It's not out of the question, but, you know, it'd be cool to have a park with an ocean view from far away. But we sided on the fact that let's be reasonable, and this is the area that we landed. We were hoping for 3 to 5 acres, but when really evaluating the terrain from a topographic map, we then kind of settled on more than likely 1.5 acres to be reasonable, just because the developer trying to build what they want to build and us taking up 5 acres of their land potentially. So we landed at 1.5 acres. It's not ideal. Would like to see more. Derek and I really talked it over, and you know, we both said it would be nice. But 1.5 acres is definitely reasonable too. We can do a lot on 1.5 acres. So that's an idea. If you guys got questions, I can take that before switching over to the park master plan document.
It does look, I mean, the topo lines, it's not flat there.
Oh, no. Mm-mm.
Right. So obviously there's challenges in building in not flat territory, whether it's housing or anything else. So it's possible to build some kind of recreational facility there, even though it's not flat? I mean, would you want to flatten some of it out to make a playground or what?
Yeah, we would definitely flatten some of it out. There'd be some areas for retaining walls and whatnot, but it's definitely workable land. Once you got up there, and as you can see, the spacing on the lines, it's the grade here isn't that bad of a downgrade going into the ravines. But once, you know, obviously the topo map doesn't lie. Once you hit here, it's just pretty steep, significant right. drop-offs. Right. And so, you know, it really wasn't as bad as, you know, some of it looks here on this screen.
Yeah.
Okay. It's definitely manageable.
You're not in
Yeah. You're Hold on, Anna. Cheryl had her hand up first.
Oh, okay.
Raise
can you show
up.
Again which... Can you show again? I've been trained. Lots of Zoom meetings. can you show again how it would be accessed?
Yeah, so...
gotta be this now.
Not... This access could happen. It's really up to the developer and what their cost and budget would be. There would be a need for a bridge through
okay.
here. So one of the other entryways would be, and I can't, it's hard for me to see it on here. I believe right through here, there is a service road, logging road
okay.
right in here. I'm not 100% sure the exact location, but this is the other access point. We did, while we were there, we were looking and evaluating where, how, if there could be a way to punch more of a road through the grade through here. There is a creek that runs through the ravine, or this little ravine. It's kind of the beginning of the bigger ravine all the way down here. But there is an access point, and that could be just, you know, extending that road and having that be the access point in.
Yeah, actually, if you look at Google Earth, you can see that road that you're talking about.
Can you? Okay. Yeah, it's a little hard
yeah.
to see with everything kind of faded out and the topo lines on here, but see if I can.
I don't know if I can share my screen. I have it up.
Oh, do you? Okay.
Yeah. Up, I can, it says. Oh, I got it.
You got it?
Mike, you have to unshare
hold on.
First.
So probably right here?
Hold on, Mike has to unshare his.
What
okay.
am I doing here? Something.
Yeah.
Oh, hold on, guys.
You unshare, then Cheryl can share, I think.
Okay, Cheryl.
Yeah.
It's coming up.
Mine says it's sharing.
There it is. Yeah. I. Oh, there's
yep.
the road.
Yep.
So I think it's this.
Yep, that's it. Mm-hmm.
So that's 60th,
yeah.
and then at the end of 60th somewhere, there's just, it kind of fades into gravel
yeah.
road or something.
Yeah, it's
cool.
So that's obviously all that clearing, that's all the new apartments, and that white little
mm-hmm.
truck that's at the very end of 60th there, or white vehicle, no, come down, Cheryl,
oh.
on 60th Street, yeah, right there.
Oh, yeah, right here.
So that, obviously, that location is still there. To the left would be, is parking, and... Right, there's a little barrier. If you go a little bit up, there's two logs that are across that road to
yeah,
prevent
right there.
Vehicle access. Those two logs are still there, and you can walk right up.
Cool. And so it's right around here,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes up. One and a half acres.
Hmm. Cool.
Al, go ahead.
There's no thought, because it's so small, there's no thought whatsoever that you're going to try and put any sort of a ball field in there, right?
Yeah, we initially talked about, you know, maybe some smaller ball fields could go in there if we had a little bit more property to access. But initially, and this could definitely change, you know, as we go through the process working with the developer, there might be, you know, once they kind of have a better idea of what they want to do, we can build and have a better idea of what we want to do, and that'll happen just naturally through the whole process. But yeah, we initially talked about smaller fields, but then when we kind of whittled it down to an acre and a half, give or take, it could still happen, you know, smaller size soccer fields or something to that effect, you know, open space area that can be a multi-use for soccer, t-ball, whatever, and but yeah, in regards to like larger size fields, it would just take up too much real estate up there with the needs of the other things that the community up in that area needs, you know, playgrounds, a picnic shelter, stuff like that. And that kind of will lead me into, let me me share this other document from the park master plan. So that leads me here. And so mainly just want to, can everybody see that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is what came out of the park master plan in regards to the needs in that area. And here's your North Newport Neighborhood Park. And so these are all the amenities that were identified through the master plan that should go or potentially go into that park. And this is where we kind of picked and choose what should we do. If we can still do it, we will do a field. You know, these are your sports fields. But having, you know, some like a picnic shelter in there, having a decent sized playground in there, you know, in regards to the overall benefit that it could be provided to the community, those are in my eyes. And, you know, obviously we're so far away from doing this, there would be a lot of community input that would be needed from this. And that's really what we're going to tailor it to, is the community input, not my input, not, this isn't Mike Cavanaugh Park. And so if there's a need for a sports field and it comes out as a heavy thing from the community that they want, heavily favored, then, you know, then we'll evaluate that and try to fit something in there. But I from my standpoint, I would love to see a decent playground in there for the amount of kids that are over there, talking with a couple council members who have a big heart for that area, have seen over and over and over multiple times kids just playing in the parking lots in those apartment complexes, or in that new apartment complex. And that area is just going to grow even more with the other residential developments that are happening back in that area. So I think playgrounds is that's my big thing, and then if we can fit fields in, we will.
I'm sorry, I have to go. I have my training.
Oh.
All right.
I'd rather have this. Sorry.
No, that's okay.
Thanks, Cheryl.
Thank you.
Bye.
So hold on, before I call on Anjanette, I have to point out that we don't have a quorum anymore with the loss of Cheryl. So I think that I'm gonna try this and then plead ignorance if it's not okay and Peggy gets mad. But I'm gonna officially adjourn us. And then hope that everybody else will just kind of hang out and we can have an informal discussion with respect to the rest of the agenda. Mike, is that reasonable?
Yeah, I'll have to stop the Granicus. I'll have to stop Granicus, and we'll have to, our meeting will be adjourned. Yeah, at this time.
I have to do it. Sorry, Mike.
Oh no. It's our rules rule that we have to follow.
Them's the rules. So, all right, I'm officially adjourning. All right, I'm adjourning us at 10:11 a.m. And now we will have informal discussion of items of mutual interest to those of us on the call. So go ahead, Anjanette.
I was curious as to whether when development plans are approved by the city for, you know, new apartment blocks or new neighborhoods or whatever, they don't include the requirement for public space or, you know, playgrounds and so on.
Say that again. Sorry. I was trying to stop our,
I just wondered, in a lot of cities, if you have this many units, then along with that, you need this much open space or playground space. You know, you can't just build chock a block units but do we not have that requirement in Newport?
I would.
It sounds like we don't. But
I think we do. We have some requirements, which is what led that the current apartment complex to have that playground unit that's in there. The current one, it's not an adequate playground for the size. Realistic. I think I can't speak for what our planning department has for development. We do have the SDC charges that we do for development charges that these developers kick in to help with building of parks later on down the road for those areas. But, I don't know the specifics on what the requirements are from the development side. That would be a question for Derek that I would have to ask. But I know there is some, because we have playgrounds that have already been put in with these apartments. But, you know, from a broader approach, I think the playground covers that area, that apartment itself, but it doesn't cover the entire footprint of the North Agate area. And that's the bigger issue. That's our issue that we need to figure out.
So, Mike, would the idea here be to partner with the private landowners in the way that we partner, that the city partners with Wilder on the playground there? Is that the model we're talking about?
Similar model. I'm not familiar 100% with the Wilder model because that was previous to my time. I'd have to ask some questions on what that agreement is. If that's just a land lease agreement per se, this one would be a permanent park. I think with Wilder, like the dog park, that's constantly moving as development happens out there. I don't believe in this case it would be, okay, we're ready to develop that 1.5 acres, 5 years from now, and they're like, okay, you no longer have a park. This would be a true trade-off with us helping with infrastructure to the area. And again, those details haven't been really worked out. It's just a very vague, we'll help with, would you be open to the idea of the city helping with infrastructure in regards to acquiring some land so we can do a park development? The Wilder one, I'm not 100% on those details.
You might look into what that arrangement is, because my understanding is that the playground itself at Wilder, not the dog park, but the playground, is jointly managed or somehow we have an agreement.
Sorry, yes. I totally spaced on the playground over there in the park itself. I was thinking the dog park and everything. Thank you.
Oh, yeah,
yes,
that's
the
different.
Dog park or the playground area in the beginning of the trail system over there through our park, that is all city property. So that itself, again, I don't know how that came about because I don't know the history on that, but it sounds like it is similar because that is 100% our property and we manage that property that's over there.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sorry, Nancy, for...
Oh, no, that's fine. Yeah. Not having had a playground age child in a while, I haven't been there, but I know that it's there. Mm-hmm. I think that, as you point out, if we move forward, if the city moves forward with this, and I hope we will, there'll be lots of opportunity for public input. There's going to be, this meeting is not where we decide what goes here, right? But I would say that I would lean more towards playgroundy type stuff than even, I'm a big ball field aficionado, but I would lean in this case more towards playgrounds type stuff. Because of the folks that live there, that's what they're probably going to need, I would think. And what's interesting is I'm really interested in what's happened with Coast Park, which was like maybe the last big playground that we developed in the city. And Coast Park is really, the different kinds of play equipment that are there are terrific, but my understanding is that it's been hard to replace parts and stuff because they're not tremendously standard. So we might think about that as we move forward. Maybe I'm getting that story wrong, but it feels like, Coast Park didn't work out the way we might have hoped just because it's been hard to get replacement parts and that kind of thing and to do maintenance on that, the weird play equipment that's there. Is this wrong?
Some stuff has been hard. We're actually replacing some pieces here soon, hopefully out over at Coast Park that have been missing for some time. I think the problem with Coast is a very popular park. Something that I've been hearing for the last year from park maintenance is, and that's, I think, some of the root cause of why we have pieces breaking is, I think the style of that play equipment can come off as it's adult friendly also. Seeing many adults playing on that playground, parkour, American Ninja kind of feel, which,
right.
It's the first thing my 4-year-old said when he saw that part. He's like, oh, I'm a ninja. And then he's like crawling all over the place, which is awesome for a kid, not awesome for adults. And so that has led to some faster maintenance issues that normally wouldn't come up. Again, Coast Park is right there in a very highly populated area, visited area, and so we have a lot of people, and it's a draw. It's a great park. That play equipment I don't would see could fit well. you know, I don't want to say what we should do the traditional playground out there, but it would definitely be worth evaluating what type of play equipment. And I'm hoping this winter, with the funding that we received from the budget in the last budget year, hoping to work with some consultants during the wintertime for the Agate Park playground and get a very good idea of what's out there. I've already kind of started looking at play equipment in different packages that are there, and there's quite a wide variety. But yeah, I agree with you, Nancy. I think it wouldn't, I don't want to say no to it, but I don't think it would be the best play equipment to have there. That style.
Yeah, I kind of assume. Yeah. Well, that's for a conversation down the road anyway, but yeah, just a thought. And any possibility there, Mike, of connecting via trail to open space to the east? Like, what's to the east of that? On this map, it looks like there's a big neighborhood to the east of it, but.
You know, we didn't walk too far east. I believe at some point it on the east side it butts up behind what's that community there? What's the big the neighborhood that's back there behind Agate and Tsunami Training.
Right.
There's a
Longview.
Thank you. Yes, thank you, Jeff. That property butts right into Longview. So okay. It is, there is a limit there. Now there is a trail system in there. You know, again, I don't know if it's logging roads or if it's true trail, but there were people that we came across while we were back there that were walking their dogs from the apartment complex. And so there's some trails that wander through there. I don't know if they're just cut through from the Longview neighborhood or where exactly they all lead, but there is some trails that run through there.
That's, you know, long term, that might be a thought, you know, to connect some trails back there.
Yeah, you know, maybe cool. Potentially butting into, somehow tying into that Nautical Hill trail system that's right. Private property. You know, there could be potential there.
Yeah. So what can we do to support this? What would the next step?
You guys kind of already started it within that memo that was presented to council. The very last paragraph, you guys did a very good job of emphasizing the need for a park like this in this location. I think expanding on that, maybe diving into the types of potential uses that we could put within that park would be a good thing. And this, just all in all, it's just garnering that more additional community support from the Parks and Rec Advisory Committee to continue sharing that forward. This is all going to be presented to City Council in a work session. I think it's in December is when I'll be discussing this with City Council. Derek will be there also to assist with that. But it's just to kind of, let's start scratching the surface. Let's start, you know, entertaining this idea, looking it over, mulling through it. And so that this is just that first initial step. And that's where basically a little bit of support from you guys, the short answer for you, support from you guys with ideas on what you guys would like to see in that area, knowing from what you guys know about the park master plan and the level of service that we are not providing for that area of Newport.
Excellent. Well, consider it supported for sure, I'd say, based on our conversation today. And I do think, you know, like I said, I'd lean personally more towards playground than anything else there. But what I would really want is for the community itself to get engaged and you know, ask them what they would like to see. So I think, you know, the ideal park in Newport is a place where the local residents who live around the park are happy with what's there and can use what's there. And maybe, you know, it becomes a destination for others in the city based on some special aspect of it that we don't have anywhere else, right? So like Coast Park, we don't live near Coast Park, but we used to go there all the time when my son was small because of the slide, right? It was a huge draw. So that's the kind of thing I'm thinking of, like mostly what they specifically want there, but maybe there's some special aspect that draws people from beyond. So very cool. Okay, any other comments? Let me know what I can do if you need stuff written. Yep, Sam, go ahead.
I have a random question. Has anyone ever talked about the viability of having a bocce ball court set here in town?
Oh, what fun. I don't remember that ever coming up in any of our Parks Master Plan, but bocce is super fun.
You know, Sam, No, I was just going to say, I've never heard anybody mention bocce ball since being out here. I love it, though. I love bocce ball. I actually have a set at my house.
I do, too. And my aunt is in a 55-plus community down in, oh, my gosh, Sonoma. And I went and visited her, and everyone plays it. Like, everyone plays it. I didn't know if, like, the conditions here with, like, wind and, like, the courts being, like, the way that they had them were sand. But I just thought, wow, they have like so many leagues. And I just thought, God, this feels like an opportunity here with a lot. We have a, you know, good sized retirement community, you know, and I thought maybe there's something there, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's a thought. I think it's a great thought. And I think, you know, we did try with the Parks Master Plan to think, to be a little bit forward thinking about like, what are the next recreational opportunities, you know? So do we resurface the tennis courts as tennis courts, or do we resurface them and stripe them as pickleball courts? Because that's what, you know, more people are playing these days. That's an example, you know? So always got to be thinking about
when you were saying Coast Park. And so kind of what you were saying, Mike, also about it kind of has this appeal to adults as well. And there's a lot of people that are, you know, because it's near the pack. I just wondered, like, is there a strip that could have bocce ball, like, set up, but you'd have to bring your own balls kind of thing, but just a thought.
Yeah, more interactive to actually benefit or be adult-friendly while also being kid-friendly. I know what direction you're headed. Yeah, yeah. You know, it could be tough.
Seed planted.
Yeah, the seed is planted. Yeah. You know, I would love it. I was thinking right as you were saying it could be challenging because the courts I have seen that are bocce are usually a sand rock base, and that could be challenging during these current months that we're in.
Exactly.
But, you know, I wonder, you know, if there's covers that could be somehow installed, something. It'd be interesting. You know, another piece I would love to see within some of our playgrounds is some of those outdoor workout equipment.
I
would love to see something like that because those are more adult friendly, obviously. They've really changed here in the last like 5-10 years where they're really actually amazing. I know when they first came out, it wasn't the best equipment or just kind of was like real basic standard stuff. I would like to see something like that. I don't know about this park, but incorporating that into some of our other parks, you know, especially after going through COVID. Gyms shut down, people can't go and exercise. Well, what's the next best thing? Outdoor exercise equipment. So potentially something like that. Volleyball courts potentially would be amazing. You know, there's a lot of things. Yeah.
Climbing walls.
Yeah.
Climbing wall.
Yeah. There's a lot of opportunities potentially, whether it's this site or some other sites for development. And I'm actually excited when just thinking of like the community input period when we're reaching out to these neighborhoods or stakeholders to just to hear their thoughts and just to see what kind of ideas they have that the community would want. Because to me, that's an exciting thing. So, yeah, it'd be interesting. Yeah, you planted the seed. Very, very good job there, CM, with that.
Great. Okay, we do need to move on. We're actually almost at 10:30, which is normally the time that we would wrap it up here.
Told you, Nancy, don't let me talk.
I know, see? All right, Mike, if you unshare your screen, that will help me, thank you. I'm gonna mention just very briefly that under item 4D in our agenda that Anjanette has had to step aside as our representative to the Vision 2040 committee. So we're going to be looking for a new representative there. Cheryl was the alternate and is just, you know, she's just too busy with work right now to take that on. So she has declined. So I don't want to have a big discussion about it now, but I would like to, everybody to think about whether they could have another hour a month, I guess, or so to participate as the Parks and Recreation representative to that committee. And they're doing great things. So I would really like to keep us engaged there. Yeah, Anjanette.
I just wanted to say that I think it's a great committee. I think that it's got great leadership with Leslie and she gets people working on it, and it's a big committee. There's a lot of stakeholder representatives as well as advisory committee. But I do want to, I mean, this was my problem. It really takes commitment. So it's going to take some time. It's only an hour or two a month for the meeting, but you know, she is trying to get people to get on committees and actually move the vision for the city forward, which is wonderful. So just keep that in mind, and if you've got the vision, do it.
Thank you. Yeah. So think about that, and there, you know, obviously we don't even have a quorum here today, so there's lots of other members of our committee that are out there, and I'll probably send around an email reminding people of this vacancy soon. Mike, you have two departmental reports to get through, but can we keep them short?
How much time do you guys have? You guys ready for another hour and a half?
2 minutes.
I'll keep it short. 2 minutes. So let's see where to start. Working on some projects on my end. I've learned very quickly. I've kind of bitten off too many projects trying to do things as quickly as possible. And now I'm having to peel back and slow down, not having enough management. Working with Public Works on the Agate Beach Trail behind Roby's, not the Lucky Gap Trail, but the Agate Beach Trail there. That bottom half of the trail wasn't completed. It's just a bunch of rocks and boulders that we've put in place with permission to State Parks. And it's not a workable solution. So we're starting through that, hopefully going in front of council looking for funding for that project. And then hopefully to use some of that as leverage for some grant money to complete that bottom half of the trail working with State Parks. Business plan, worked on some of that. We had our surf contest in the month of September, so that ate up a lot of my time also in August. That was a pretty quick turnaround, 2 month turnaround to put that event on. Awesome event that happened in September. We had the most people we've ever had before for the event. We were the only surf contest on the Oregon coast, potentially in the whole Pacific Northwest. That was happening. It was great. Live feed, had it going online. People were watching from all over the world. It was a really cool thing. Met with our IT department, looking at potentially down the road providing or getting Wi-Fi into some of the parks for public users. 60 Plus Center, D was working and is humming along, getting programs back up and running for the month of September. She did a very good job. She took on NRPA, working with the CDC and getting some of those programs and grants, overseeing those. Then in the month of September, she was pretty much, for those that don't know, D left at the very beginning or at the end of September, beginning of October. She had some family stuff that she had to take care of, so she resigned. And so for the month of September over at the 60 Plus Center, she was really just creating a template and a document for Judy Cook, who was another office clerk, previous office clerk. She came in and she's now working and running the facility. So Dee did an excellent job. We miss her dearly, and we hope that she'll return to us once things improve on her family end. The Aquatic Center, Aquatics did Fun Friday programming in the month of August. It was going really well, great turnout, and then COVID Delta killed the program. And so the back half of August stopped all of that just due to large numbers of people actually turning out to the pool. And so we wanted to make sure we're doing things safely, so we canceled those programs. We kept private swim lessons going, and group lessons, and they were going really well, filling up reservations or filling up all spots within, I think, like 5-10 minutes of it being open. That's how much of a high demand it is, so we hope to continue to expand on that. For those that don't know, Keely went on maternity leave in the month of October, and she will be back in November, probably the second half of November. So pretty much now, all programming over there is come to a very slow start for that period while she's out, due to not having an assistant supervisor over there. Because Keely was promoted into the supervisory position, we haven't been able to fill the assistant supervisor yet. So in the meantime, we've had Jessica, a former staff member, come on as a CPO and helping out with draining of the pool and whatnot. Rec Center's gone very well. They had actually a customer service training between them and the Aquatic Center staff. Great, great, great training. In regards to creating team building, first time we've ever had training between the Aquatic Center and the Rec Center staff, so that was awesome. And the customer service training was good. It was something much needed that I know the supervisors have been talking about for a while. And then also, the Rec Center participated in National Night Out in August, and then they had their, like we talked about at the beginning, Latinx Night, Community Night, which is an awesome, awesome first step into reaching out to that group in our community, welcoming them into our facility. We had translators, we had different documents for them to take home. We had swim lessons, we had childcare opportunities for people to go around, we had vaccinations happening. So it was awesome, awesome program. And I know talking with Judy, she was very, very excited about it. I missed it because I think the same time as our last meeting, and I was under the COVID watch, so I couldn't make it. But Judy has told me that she's excited and she can't wait to do it again. Parks, I don't have a parks report because I am the parks maintenance supervisor too, and these guys are doing a lot. The crew itself is doing an amazing job. We've really defined where and how our crews are. We've reevaluated on a very 10,000 foot scale of a daily, weekly schedule for them to be attacking each crew, and then special projects that we had. From a park side, we did our volunteer work day that was out at Frank Wade. First time we've ever done a volunteer work day, and it was an awesome program. I thought it was an awesome toe in the water. We tested it. We saw how it went. There were some good things, some bad things that happened. But all in all, we had about 30 to 40 volunteers, I believe, show up, and we did a lot of work. The biggest thing was upgrading the maintenance on the playground that happened out there. And you guys should go take a look. We just kind of focused on the playground and that little corner of the tennis courts and the hillside there. We didn't really go further anywhere else into the park, but it was a great first step. It's really given us a good template to move forward with other volunteer days at all these other parks that we have. So we're hoping to start that back up in springtime. Sports, Billy's been doing a great job. Billy assisted on the surf contest with me. He said it was an awesome event. He's never been a part of an event like that, and he said it was great and a learning experience. Billy's jumped in both feet first. He's got middle school volleyball, youth volleyball, and middle school cross country running for the fall, and he's already opened up registration for basketball. Numbers are kind of low from previous years, but that's expected due to the Delta variant. But all in all, it's been great. Billy ran adult softball, and so we had a men's league and co-ed league. And that's kind of where I'm going to leave it. I've rambled too long. That was seven minutes.
No, that was great. There's a lot going on. Thank you, Mike. Comment. We have no committee comments. I'll hold my tongue. I want to establish our next meeting date, and then if anybody wants to stay in chat, we'll just have the committee comments be chat. I have to get going, but in looking at the calendar, the fourth Tuesday of November is just before Thanksgiving, so we could do that. That's the 23rd. my inclination would be to push it off to the next week, to the 30th, since we do have that extra Tuesday in November, just to avoid Thanksgiving week altogether. December is always a problem because of Christmas, but does anybody have an objection to having it on the 30th? No? I'm going to send out an email to the whole committee sometime today, and I'll mention that. And if there's a problem, we can move it back to the 23rd, I suppose. But I'd like to put it on the 30th. Mike, does that work for you?
Yeah, I should be working that day. I don't plan on taking any time off. So.
Okay. All right. So we'll plan on that. And then in terms of agenda, one of the things I really wanted to point out is that we have to start our goal setting process. For the committee for next year. I'm going to send you all around a memo from Spencer that outlines some of the requirements and so forth for doing that. Our goals that we came up with last year are listed at the end of our agenda every time. So it's on the agenda today. You can see them at the bottom under number 11. But there's a whole tracking program that the city uses and a more formal process than this than it used to be. Tied very closely to Vision 2040, actually. So I think we did a pretty good job last year in looking at our goals that we set for last year. We did actually check a lot of them off, and some of the ones we weren't able to check off, they're like personnel type reasons that we weren't able to do them because we didn't have a person in that role or something. So we did a good job, and we're going to have to report out on those, and then we're going to have to set new goals for next year. So what I'm going to have everybody do before next time is a little bit of homework and just both looking at what our goals were and then thinking about what we might want to do for next year. So that will be the bulk of our next agenda for November. Might actually also ask Billy to come in just for a minute or two towards the beginning, Mike, because he hasn't sort of met the committee yet. You know, a little meet and greet. We haven't done that with him. So I mentioned that to him at the Frank Wade thing. So does anybody have anything else? We've already technically adjourned, so this is just like chit chat. Okay. Awesome. Woo! You guys are terrific. Glad everybody was able to be here. Hopefully we'll be able to be in person soon. Plan on the 30th and look for an email from me soon. And that's it. Off to work.
Off to work.
Off to work.
Thank you, Nancy. Right.
See you all.
Later.
Bye.
Thanks, everyone.
Take care. Goodbye.